In past episodes, we talked about the advantages of being in a sim racing team. The ability to share data and information between team members is invaluable, especially if you're trying to work your way up the classes. Apart from covering all the e-racing shenanigans in the past week, this episode we are joined by Simon Feigl. He is the founder of the Logitech G Altus Esports Sim Racing Team, and we find out that running a professional race team is more than just a leisurely fang with a bunch of friends online who have weird usernames and a Twitch account. Welcome to eRacing X, a podcast dedicated to bringing you some news, information, and an insight into what the virtual racing world is all about. Hello, everybody, and welcome to eRacing X. I'm joined today by Nathan Huppets. How are you, Nathan?
Very good to be here. How are you today?
Excellent. It's just the two of us. Clarky's still got the dreaded lurgy. Suppose he's not the COVID lurgy, but he's still got the dreaded lurgy regardless. It's just the two of us.
Yeah, we wish him well. Hope he recovers and is watching a bit of E-Series racing while he lies in his hotel room, in his bed.
Also joining us later on in the show is Simon Feigl, and he started an e-racing team back in 2018, and he's pretty serious about this, and we were going to ask him a few questions about the whole team's thing in e-racing. But first, let's get on with a bit of news and a bit of scuttlebutt. The main headline is Daniel Abt. Obviously, last week you talked about he got caught having putting a ringer in to drive for him. And now it turns out he's lost his gig with Audi as well. So it just keeps getting worse for these drivers.
I know. It's a little bit crazy to watch, but I guess we've talked about this before in previous podcasts. You're still representing your sponsors. You're representing your team. To get caught out blatantly cheating and employing a professional sim racer to race for you was, I think fairly risky. And apparently even when they crossed to him live, they had a video on him in the sim rig that the camera was positioned so that you couldn't see his face.
Mike.
He made a real effort. And look, even his Wikipedia page has been updated to say he was suspended and then sacked by the Audi team. So he's, it's not a great entry in the Wikipedia to have, I don't think.
This brought social media to a new level with his iRacing stuff, or just this online racing stuff. It was a Formula E event. He was originally qualifying down in 15th and suddenly was up there on pole or second. But supposedly red flags were going up. This isn't the first time it happened. This has been going on for maybe a round or two, and a few red flags have popped up, and some of the drivers were starting to be vocal about this. And it's just really come to the front because it was so blatant that he did it and he wasn't even there to, well, he come third. And then they said, let's talk to the third place getter, and he wasn't even there. So what do you do?
It's just a game, no one would care. But, you know, this is serious stuff. And we even see it in our local iRacing competitions sometimes, or people suspect that someone else is logging in under someone else's account and this sort of thing. So I'm sure it happens. They may not get caught, but I'm sure it goes on.
People have tried it. I'm sure they've got away with it. They're going to continue to try and still try and get away with it. So I suppose you can't compete unless you've got the Zoom camera on. So that is part of what they're trying to stop that, obviously.
Yeah, it's just like supercars as well. But they want to have that accessibility, you know, to the driver and talk to them and see what they're doing. And that you've got that advantage in being able to do that. So can understand it. But I just can't believe the impact that it's had on his career. He's been dumped from a professional team, Audi. You know, he's been driving Formula E for years, I think 3 or 4 years now. So he's probably quite a well-paid professional driver. So the impact that this has had on his professional life is really large.
Well, we can just go and put him in the same class as Landon Cassill, Bubba Wallace, and I can't remember, Pagano, I think. What do you do? Some people think it's a bit crazy. Some people reckon, well, there's a lot at stake here. We've got sponsors. We've got UNICEF as the sponsor of this thing, or, you know, the charity, you know. Let's cheat for charity. It's probably not a good look.
No, not a good look.
Moving on in the news, Shane van Gisbergen, he's competing in the World Rallycross Series, and he's won the first round of the World Rallycross Esports Series, and it's a four-round series, and it started off really good.
Oh, he dominated Nev. I watched some of it. I think he set the fastest time in every session. He won all the qualifying races as well, I think. So he really, really showed his talent as a sim racer for sure.
It looks like the only guy that could really take it up to him was Tom Blomqvist, the son of rally legend Stig Blomqvist.
A very well-known name.
Absolutely. He's he was pretty much leading. He pretty much topped, like you said, topped the timesheets all the way through. Supposedly, Van Gisbergen's time was faster than the actual pro sim's time for the final. So that just shows you how good Shane Van Gisbergen is compared to anybody.
He's always been fast in a sim, so his speed doesn't surprise me at all. And he's in that rallycross series as well. There are some other big names in there. Kelvin Vandalinde, Charles Leclerc was in there, Scott Pye was in there as well. So, yeah, some big names in there and some pretty accomplished sim races too, and he absolutely brained them. He did a fantastic job.
I haven't watched it all, so I'm going to be, after this show, I'm going to be sitting down and watching the rest of it, so I'm looking forward to it. Let's hope that he keeps his sim racing, because he's heard he's come back over from New Zealand to Australia and he's gone to the 2-week lockdown. I'm hoping there's a sim rig in his lockdown room.
I can nearly guarantee it, Nev. I think we should check in and go into a room with a sim rig for sure. For sure.
That leads us on to Supercar E-Series. That was a pretty good affair again last week where they raced at Interlagos, and I can't remember the other track they raced at, Phillip Island. Oh. You caught that. What did you think of the racing there?
Oh, I thought every week there seems to be an improvement in the guys. Obviously, the drivers who hadn't sim raced before have really improved since the first round, and the Phillip Island race was a great way to sort of benchmark how far some of these guys have come. And to see Davey Reynolds doing well, I think there was a bunch of drivers who set qualifying laps and race laps that were well over a second faster than the start of the season. And a number of them commented in the media that the racing was far better, it was less scrappy, there were less mistakes being made, and yeah, I thought that really showed through on the broadcast. I thought the racing was quite good.
Any standouts for you? We talked about Dave Reynolds. He's been getting instructions from Anton, his teammate, and Anton, I think, got on his rig or gave him some help and helped him go faster. So Dave is definitely putting in the hours. But is there any other standouts for you?
Really knows Jack LeBrock, I think, has come a fair way. He's had some pretty solid results. The Walkinshaw Andretti United team, now they've been advised and assisted by Simon Feigl and some other compatriots of his. We're going to talk to Simon shortly, but they've shown some really good pace. So Chaz Mostert has really surprised me, actually. He's really taken the sim racing thing on seriously. They've put some engineering time and some strategy time into it. And between himself and Bryce, I think they've both done a really, really good job as well.
What, do you have the latest points for the E-Series?
The points table at the moment sees Shane Van Gisbergen leading by 146 points over Scott McLaughlin. So he's got quite a healthy lead now. And he won two of the races last week. Anton picked up the second race in there. So, yeah, Giz has really been showing how strong he is as a series-long competitor. He may not have been the fastest driver at every track, but he certainly made the most of his opportunities. So.
And I know this is being recorded on Tuesday, so some people might get a bit late, but when is the next round or the next couple of rounds of the E-Series? How many rounds are there left on the E-Series, actually?
Yeah, we've got two rounds left. So 3rd of June, tomorrow night's our time, but by the time you listen to this, it's probably done and dusted. They're going back to America, to Road Atlanta and Road America. So two great racetracks, really great proper racetracks. I've always enjoyed racing on those in iRacing. And then the finale is a couple of Australian classics. We've got Oran Park, which is an older track that iRacing had scanned, not around anymore. So it's great to be able to race around that historic little layout. Great for supercars, actually. Lots of undulation and corners, so you've got to be good with a throttle, and we might see a lot of sideways action, I think, at Oran Park. And the final at Mount Panorama. Where else could you race for the final race but the mountain?
Actually, I've got an inkling the next round might have been changed. They put out a vote and they might be doing an oval. They were talking about doing an oval because, let's face it, that oval track, I reckon, was one of the best races they've had.
We had some great action at the oval last time, so I'd be quite excited to see them go back to an oval.
I'm looking through Motorsport 360, the app, and they've got a news story from Supercars saying that it'll make its second oval next week with the Michigan Speedway confirmed as the schedule. It looks like there's an oval in this next round, and then the final round is Oran Park and Mount Panorama. I'm actually looking forward to Oran Park because I've never really seen this generation of supercar on a race at Oran Park, and I think it might be a bit of a leveler.
Yeah, it's a great track because you've got the over under, you go over the bridge, and it's lots of fast undulating corners. It's going to make for some good racing. There's lots of lines you can take around Oran Park as well, so it should be good.
You're listening to E-Racing X. I need to get on a couple of things. The Aussie Mix and Fix, dude. I don't know how to start this. You started, qualified a little down. The commentators were surprised you were down that far on the grid, but that was only the start of your woes. Fill us in what happened.
Yeah, so Sunday night was the final round of the 12-week Aussie Mixed and Fixed Championship. I came into the round 16 points in the lead of the championship, which was a very slim margin, but it was...
Supposedly, what you had to do was finish fourth or higher and you would have had it wrapped up.
I think I needed to finish within a couple of places of Tim Feben from Mark 1 Esports, and it was important to qualify well there because Detroit Belle Isle, it's a concrete jungle. If you thought Bathurst was tough on mistakes across the top of the hill, you try doing a race in Detroit. It was going to be important to qualify near the front. And I had reasonable pace in practice. Tim looked pretty strong. But I couldn't get my last few quali laps together. So that put me down a little bit, and a little bit unfortunate to start. I think I was around 10th or 11th or so, which was a bit low, but tried the aggressive early pit stop. And next thing you know, software crash, and I got dropped out of the game. By the time I reconnected, it was too late to really get back into the race. So unfortunately, I didn't really have much of a chance to try and retain the win.
Mate, so you finished second in the championship.
Yeah, so look, fantastic result for Fusion Sim Racing. We finished second outright in the championship, and I think I won the pro class as well. So I was battling up there with some elite drivers, some high-rated drivers. So can't be too sad with that. Craig Edwards finished third in the championship. He's another Fusion driver, and we had another team member finish fifth. So great result for the team. Not the best result for me.
The 12 weeks of all this going on, it all come down to a computer crash.
I could have a loose wheel from a pit stop in real life. My gear knob could come off in my hand. Something always happens. It always happens.
Yes, okay. But in sim world, it's computer just crashed.
Wheel came off, I don't know. So, yeah. The only consolation was that it wasn't my mistake that ended the fight. It was a technical problem. So I got to watch the rest of the race, and it was some great racing. So if you haven't seen the Aussie Mixed and Fixed last round from Detroit, go and watch it. The finish was really good, very tight battle.
Yep.
And Tim Feben deserved the win, so congratulations to Tim.
It was at the end of a series, which puts me onto one of the racing that's coming up for you, and you're doing the Le Mans 24 Hour. Is that the right name for it, or Le Mans 24 Hour? Is it a special name for this online race?
Just the Le Mans 24 Hour. Yeah, I mean, it's iRacing have these special events that's outside their normal weekly official series that are ongoing, and they tend to be the Enduros. So the Le Mans 24 Hours is coming up on June the 20th, so only, you know, a bit over 2 weeks away. There'll be hundreds and hundreds of sim racing teams in iRacing competing in that virtual event.
So this is...
We're already testing for it.
You're already testing. So I'm hearing stories about pro drivers setting up teams. Are they racing in this same event when they talk about this Le Mans 24 Hour?
Yep.
Does that mean you'll be racing against all those? Or you're seeing these hundreds of teams. Is there a qualifying? Is there several races on different servers? How does it work?
Yeah, they separate it into splits. So they all race at the same time. But if there's, you know, 50 teams to a server and 500 teams, then there'll be 10 servers. And so your team is put into an appropriate, what they call a split, based on your average I rating. So depending, and they run two sessions. They do like a midday Saturday to midday Sunday Australian time and a midnight to midnight session. So the early session tends to get more Asia-Pacific entrants, Japan, Korea, Australia, New Zealand, and it's not as populated. the late session is the session that all the big top European teams, Altus, would be in that one. Mm. They'd be putting cars in with their highest drivers in the top split. So that's a pretty big event. All of these iRacing special events are very well populated.
So this is just to qualify for a race you're talking about. This is not the actual race.
This is the race. So you qualify usually at the start of the event. There might be about 10 minutes of qualifying. You do a couple of quali laps and then it sets the grid and you race for 24 hours nonstop. So
it's not,
but So everyone enters at the same time and the system goes, right, who are the top 60 teams based on rating? You're going in the top, the top split, they call it. And that will be broadcast and commentated live and so on. And then there'll be the second split, third split, fourth split, and so on. And there, you know, there could be 15 to 20 different splits, all at the same race, running at the same time. And the idea is your team is matched with other teams of a similar quality or a rating. So it should be good, close racing.
So you say the rating, it depends on your rating, depends on which race you're in, whether it's the televised race or one of the other satellite races, you can call it, or whatever. So how do they win this? How many members in your team for Le Mans, say? Is there four drivers in the car?
Usually we'd run for a 24-hour race, minimum three. We ran three last year, which was a big effort. But up to maybe five. Some teams might run six, depending on their schedules and so on. But for us, we'll have four drivers per team, and we'll have four teams this year in the Le Mans 24 Hours.
So what happens when one of your drivers has a really good rating and the others don't have such a good rating? Is it averaged out? Does it go to the rating of the best driver?
It's averaged out. So it gives you then a bit of flexibility. Some teams might want to register the car with their highest rated driver and enter the server with only one driver in the car at that point, mm-hmm. and get put in a high spot, and the other drivers can enter. Or they might decide to, with their lowest I rating driver, put the car in a lower split and hopefully be you're near the top. So you can play the game a little bit, but we tend to enter the highest split we can. It's the toughest competition.
Is that the general aspiration of people competing in this, is to compete in the highest that they can, as opposed to trying to game it a bit?
Look, I think at the higher levels, you'd probably want to be in the top split just because of their prestige. But look, for anyone who's entering the race, even if they're new to iRacing, just to enter, compete and finish a 24-hour race in a good position, or even just to finish the race with a car that's still running, is honestly a massive achievement. We won the top split in the early session last year in a GTE and a BMW, and that was my best ever victory in sim racing. It was 24 hours of just intense battles, lap times, just the focus, the determination, the driving we had to do to win that against another very competitive Australian team of young sim racers. That was easily our best win, or my best win for sure.
So is that run, how many were racing in that, in your car that year? Was it three or four of you?
Yeah, we only had three. So we didn't get a huge amount. We had to, one person was usually spotting or engineering, doing strategy for another driver. So I think I only got 3 to 4 hours sleep over that 24-hour period, and we, a huge effort. And in some cases, we would sit in our individual sim rigs, not just for 1 hour for one stint or 2 hours to do a double stint. We would sit there for 4 hours nonstop without changing tires, just driving flat out. So to do that for 4 hours and focus and concentrate, not make mistakes, not wreck the car, and do that for 24 hours in a team was huge, huge achievement.
So I think you just answered one of the questions I was about to ask you. You weren't all together in the one room racing out of the one rig. You were in your different rigs, and you just click over when it was time in the pit stop, and then you're in from someone else's lounge room into your lounge room, basically.
That's it. Virtually hop out of the car, and then we also had the advantage of, we had one of our drivers in Perth, so we had a bit of a time zone advantage there, and two of us on the East Coast. So that can also help with sleep and that sort of thing. If you're all in the same location and you have to drive overnight and stay awake, that can be pretty tough.
Yes. Oh, well. Okay, Le Mans 24-hour. What else is on the horizon for you competing-wise? Is there another Aussie mix and fix? Is your wife going to let you compete in that? Because you've made her a widow for 12 Sundays in a row, dude. So what other competition is out there?
it's not just the 12 Sundays, Nev, it's also the Mondays, Wednesdays. Kids go to bed and I just go to sim rig for an hour to practice. So yeah, I think I'm going to cut back a little bit over the next few months. There is another AMF GT series. So that starts in a week or two, but I think I'll just be restricting that to Sunday evenings only and get a few hours back. And there's some other aspects I'd like to focus on for the team, do more social media work. And we've got some new drivers coming on and our driver development program is working well. We've got a few guys in that who are improving. I'd like to give them some more help and mentoring. So we might not drive quite as often over the next few months.
You're listening to eRacing X.
So that leads this discussion about teams and special events, I think, really leads us into our next chat with Simon Feigl, who's been a great friend of mine for quite a while now in the sim racing community. And Simon's been very active as a driver, but also as a team manager. So he runs one of the top teams in Australian Asia Pacific sim racing, and we think it'll be a great opportunity to have a chat with him today.
Oh, and on the line, we've got Simon Feigl. Now, Simon's, in 2018, set up his own sim racing team, the Logitech G Altus Esports Sim Racing Team. Welcome, Simon.
Thank you. Thank you. Great to be here.
Okay, you've set up a sim racing team. Isn't setting up a sim racing team just a couple of guys getting on the phone and getting on the computer at the same time together and racing each other? Isn't that all the sim racing team really is?
There's a part of it, I guess, it still all starts like that. You'll get interested in, racing, and you race individually when you first get into iRacing or Gran Turismo or whatever it might be that you're racing in. But then invariably over time you want to work with others, and just, I guess, particularly in with iRacing, with the depth that there has in it, there's a lot that can be gained by working with others that are like-minded and are equally driven as you are. So it's certainly something that having a team that you work through is important.
So what's your background, Simon? Because I know you started sim racing quite a long time ago, and in our last podcast we actually talked about the benefit of a team and teammates and sharing data and that sort of thing. Were you members of other teams on iRacing or other platforms before you started to create your own?
Yeah, I was. Only from 2015. Prior to all of that, though, prior to all of iRacing, I was in. I've been in part of, I guess, sim racing since the old Grand Prix days, back in the old Jeff Crammond days. So it's like 20 odd years ago. So I've been around it a long time. But I guess from a competitive standpoint, it really kicked off in Gran Turismo, which is more sort of around the 2010, 2015 era, which I still only did on my own, and that was for the GT Academy program. But once I competed in that over in England and then came back to Australia in 2015, then joined up with Evolution Racing Australia, what was it then, and then joined as I became a co-manager of the team quite quickly and sort of worked within that team for about 3 years before then starting up Altus and kicking off from there.
So what prompted you to start your own team rather than continue working with the other teams?
I guess in some ways there was a lot of things that I wanted to do, I guess, my way, or things that I'd sort of, I guess, learned or picked up over the time and you know, just a bit of direction of where I'd like to take the team and how I'd like to structure it, things like that. So in the end, I decided it was going to be best to do that on, starting afresh. And also I think I probably needed that as well. That was kind of, I guess, what instigated the start of that, and I haven't really looked back at all. It's been a great rise and been a great journey along the way.
So I know that in my team, Fusion Sim Racing, we're a fairly well-structured team, and I guess a little bit different to some other teams. There's a big variety, I guess, of teams out there. Some are groups of mates who get together without much structure. Fusion, for example, has a committee and a code of conduct, and we organise ourselves fairly well. Did you always set out to have a professional team with more professional sorts of drivers? Was it just a bit of fun to start off? What were the goals of what you were trying to achieve, I guess? You must have had some sort of vision for it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely the whole intention when starting the team was for it to be ideally down the line to be a professional entity. I think we're still some ways away from that. Certainly there's not a lot of money in it at this point in time, but it's certainly at some point it will get to that point, just like other esports have, but they all started in a similar state as what we are as well. So we're relatively small in the scheme of things, but it's growing all the time, and certainly COVID-19 has arguably only accelerated that growth as well. But even before then, it was already trending really positively. But the goal was always to be structure itself professionally, treat it like you would a professional racing team or a professional sports team, and put like-minded people who are equally committed to the cause, equally driven, and then try to get the best results possible.
Simon, we hear a lot about esports prize money and that out there for other games, and there's been the odd stories of even millions of dollars. So what type of money is out there?
Yeah, look, it's a good point. So certainly prize money in some titles is greater than others. Some is a little bit more focused. I think iRacing's perhaps a little bit more focused on fewer events, but then they're really large. So Porsche Esports Super Cup, which is $250,000 as a prize pool. Coca-Cola NASCAR, which is $300,000. These are all US dollars as well. Mm-hmm. Even the Supercars E-Series last year, I can't remember what the total prize pool, but I think the winner got $15,000 or something like that. So Josh Rogers, for example, he's an Australian. He won so many things last year, and that was with lesser prize pools. I think he earned around about $60,000 just himself. So, and he's probably the best iRacer, or certainly last year, without doubt, was. So that gives a bit of an idea. But even then, that was when the Porsche prize pool was only $100,000, whereas now that alone is $250,000. So there's exponential growth in the prize pools that are coming out.
So when you talk about a prize pool, can I get an understanding of how it kind of works within, like, it's not the winner takes all. There's obviously a bit of a structured system to how the sponsorship and prize money goes.
It does vary, I guess, like any competition would. But in the case of, say, Super Cup, or I'm pretty sure NASCAR works the same in that they have race winnings. So you actually get, like in the case of Porsche, I think pretty sure you get $1,000 for a race win, for example. In their support category, even, you get $500 for the eSports Sprint Challenge for a victory. But then there's also championship prizes that are awarded throughout the field as well. So there's a mixture of championship as well as just individual performances as well.
So where do you see the future of prize money? It's growing. Do you see a top to this, or where it might end up?
Well, I almost can't see it stopping growing. I mean, I guess in many ways, just like normal sports is growing, just sports prize money across, you look across golf or tennis or other traditional sports that have been around a long time. I mean, the prize pools are just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and I don't see any reason why esport would be any different. Arguably, it will be growing at a greater rate, which is what is happening. So, I think that will only continue. And then, like with that, the next part of it is then comes down to audience and sponsorship, and as obviously other forms of income. And certainly that's an area that's continuing to grow all the time as well.
I see that you've got drivers from overseas as well. It's not just Australian drivers that are in your team. My question is still with the sponsorship. Are you seeing drivers go to teams because of sponsorship? Is that the type of thing started to happen yet? Like, so they were paid to go, or they're getting better deal at this team than another team? Is that even there yet?
Yeah, it definitely is already. So people will weigh up, I guess, options of what it will be. I mean, it used to be even just a couple of years ago, it was probably more about prestige of a team and also where that team might sit in the pseudo pecking order, because there's no official ranking for a team. But everyone's got a pretty good idea of how a team may rank. And so, like one of the probably the two bigger teams for quite a long time have been Redline and Coanda. And for instance, they don't really have a lot when it comes to commercial benefits, or not as many. Particularly when you compare it to, say, Red Bull Racing and Williams Esports, who have backing of a Formula One team and their resources, which not only is prestigious, but also has a lot of money potentially available. But even then, there's been drivers lured away from Williams again through other means. So there's definitely some of that going on. It's really pretty much at the top couple of percent of the sim racer community. So really the elite are being impacted by it, but it certainly is a factor.
So what are these guys earning?
I don't actually know real numbers, but
Have a stab. I'm thinking have a in a ballpark. What type of money does someone think they could earn at that level?
I don't think it's enough for them to live on, but I do think it's enough for them to be incentivized to go to a team and represent a team and work within that team. So I think that people, as you get there's income that can be derived through other means, and a lot of the top sort of organizations have like academies or driver schools, and they do driver coaching. Then there's also in relation to even like a sponsorship, and then streaming is a big one as well. So, you know, being a streamer and getting income through streaming is another big one. So there's certainly a number of other ways in which you can gain an income from it. There are a few, and I'm saying a few, that would actually call sim racing their profession. Wow. But it's still not a massive amount at all.
I think it's been interesting to see that growth in professionalism in the sport compared to other sports like World of Warcraft and Counter-Strike and so on, which have big audiences, big prize pools and so on. But it certainly seems like sim racing is getting there. And I think Josh Rogers, you mentioned earlier, who did very, very well, one of the best sim racing talents in the world at the moment, I think. And he's actually over in Europe now, based over there. And I think his team has a house with sim rigs in it for use and training and media and so on. So they're obviously are getting to a more professional level.
Yeah, definitely. Another team that does something similar and has for a little while is Veloce Esports. They do a lot in iRacing, but they're very, very strong as a business. They're backed by Jean-Eric Vergne and a number of other parties within motorsport. So they've built, they have a house in England, which they operate from, got a high-tech simulator in their basement. I think it's valued at $100,000 or something like that, which they do use in some ways for motorsport type training, because some of them, like in James Baldwin, who won the For What's Fastest Gamer competition, is actually going to be racing this year with RJN in the McLaren in the GT3 series in real life as part of winning that competition. So there's a lot of different parts where it joins together. There's parallels with esports teams, there's parallels with motorsport teams. There's a real mix, of how it all works together, because, you know, sim racing and its counterpart as a real sport, motorsport, there's a real massive alignment rather than, say, a FIFA or an NBA that, you know, the game itself, in terms of the mechanics of the game, are similar, but in terms of the physicality of it is completely different.
Yeah, I guess we'd love to touch on that a little bit, because we know you work for a simulation business, Modem Simulation. We'll give them a plug. I know the guys who run that business. They do a fantastic job, and the simulators are awesome. And you've also had a fair bit of involvement with WAU in the supercars. And I know we've talked on this podcast before about the crossover in skills between a real racer versus a sim racer and so on, but love to get a bit of feedback from you about your involvement with the E-Series and engineering and some of that close relationship, I guess, that you've seen between supercar drivers and esports.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I mean, the E-Series has really, in some ways, forced the hand for some to get involved into sim racing. Some already did it, Anton, Scotty, Shane Van Gisbergen, amongst a few others in the supercars field were doing it, but others certainly were not. And some of them, it's been abundantly clear that they don't. But having said that, we've been fortunate, I think, with the WAU group. I work directly with Bryce. I race engineer him on for each of the weeks, but Motum incorporate Altus for this, and we actually support them in regards to their whole team. So we've looked after Chaz, the whole series, as well as Lando and Zach Brown and Alex Rossi. So it's been fun having them involved in it, and they've really enjoyed it. But in the case of say Chaz and Bryce, the full timers, neither of them really did sim at all. So they were kind of completely new to the whole journey and understanding of how it all worked. It's been fantastic to see Chaz do so well.
He's done very well considering that he's never been around it before.
Standout, yeah. Really well.
No, it's been great. He's you know, really picked it up, and I think it showed. We felt in the first week it showed his professionalism and his approach to it, and how he was like, well, this is racing for us now, so we're gonna you know, look after our sponsors, and we're gonna, you know, put on as best a show as possible. We've got to get, you know, head down, bum up. It was just a really good attitude around getting behind it, and then obviously then we've just kind of thrived off that. In many ways, it was just part of what we do in esports all the time, so it worked really well. But and Bryce is similar. It's been fantastic. But working with WAU on the E-Series has been, yeah, a lot of fun. But also, as I said, even working with Rossi for the Watkins Glen and Montreal round was fun, because I was able to work with him just prior to Bathurst as well, with him and Hinchcliffe in the modem sim. And that was good in that way. So that was, we got to work with him directly in relation to a motorsport application, and then again, do it again about 6 months later on an esports feat. So, it was a lot of fun.
How did you find the way that they adapted to esports, because I don't think either of those guys had done much before? I presume they'd approach races and engineering in a pretty similar way to a professional sim racer.
Yeah, exactly. And also the backroom guys. So, you know, we've had, Bruce and Matt, co-team principals, have been really heavy in it, heavily involved in the whole process. So when we spot, also, we've got, I have Carl Foe, and then Sam Blacklock looks after Chaz, and Adam DeBore is also on the cans as well. So we basically have the whole team as well involved. So WAU have been really, really great in embracing the whole process, and certainly the engineering team have gone and seen what we do in esports and go, well, this is like what we do in the real world. So it's a lot of similarities to it, a lot of discussions around the strategy, when you're going to come out in traffic and all that kind of stuff that we all talk about. So, a lot of synergy, that's for sure.
Talking about the strategy, I hear that some of the pro racers do some different things that the pro sims are used to doing, bringing some of those real-world strategies into the racing. So have they been able to give you much feedback in better tactics and stuff like that?
I guess it's probably been mostly from our end. So as an esports team, we know our game, if you know what I mean. So yep. Whilst the techniques and a lot of strategies are sort of similar. And the other thing is that, the E-Series themselves have been rather popcorn in many ways. It's like the T20 of esports. It's only little eight lap races, and, you know, we've only had to put fuel in a couple of times, and, you know, so it sort of hasn't been as interesting from a strategic element as probably what those guys would be used to. But certainly a lot of it's more been around, you know, how you can use the system, or, you know, it's good and bad bits to work to your advantage, and so you're not impacted by them and things like that. So, you know, how you manage a slowdown and how you manage your incident points and all that kind of stuff, which they may not normally have to do. Well, they definitely don't have to do, but it's how you best manage them appropriately. So, yeah, that's been mostly, I guess, from the esport team telling them how to do it, and it doesn't work like that in this world. So it's just exposing them.
You talked about the E-Series being a bit of a popcorn type thing, I would call it more of an introduction into the sim racing world from non-sim racing people. You're involved with the iRacing Down Under Facebook page. I'm not too sure. Have you seen much movement there because of the E-Racing series?
Oh, I absolutely. It's been enormous. So I run iRacing Down Under with Brett Mondy, who founded it. And, just in terms of just pure numbers and amount of new member questions that are coming through, it's been tremendous. We had just under 5,000 members before COVID-19, and since then it's we've just peaked at 7,000 just last night. So, we've had over 2,000 people in 10 weeks, whereas it took years to get to 4,500. So, you know, it's the growth has been ridiculous, really, and it's unprecedented, something that we probably won't ever see again. But that's true. So we definitely don't want that. The reasons why we got to this point, but one of the the side benefit has been that. So, I think the E-Series themselves have definitely helped to promote that. We were seeing, I think, growth anyway once people realised they were going to be in lockdown as well. So it's kind of a number of different factors that caused it. But certainly I think the way in which teams and drivers embrace simulation and showed that it wasn't just a toy, it could be used for fun, obviously, and it is fun, but also I guess showed a serious side to racing was really good, I think. Yeah, so that's been fantastic.
Have you found a lot of new people that had like an interest into a bit of online racing and then they discovered that there was a whole better world or more organised and proper races and that?
Yeah, I definitely think part of it is that is you know, that there is a whole league scene, there's a back scene to the whole thing. A lot of them are just new to iRacing. iRacing itself is more of a niche platform in itself. I've never been, say, a mass player in terms of, it's not like a Gran Turismo or a Forza or F1 2019, which is for millions of people. iRacing will never have millions of people, but that's because it's more, well, I call it virtual motorsport rather than esport in some ways, because it is so serious, it's so realistic. It's particularly when you break it away. I think what we've seen more in the E-Series has been more esport in that it's piecemeal popcorn type stuff, which is great, serves its purpose. But, you know, when you start looking at replicating Le Mans or Bathurst and things like that, then obviously then it is actual virtual motorsport with an open setup and everything's the same, even the politics. So that's fantastic.
Politics all over there.
Simon, you talked about series production, though we might talk about this in another episode. Are you saying you ran some series?
Yeah, I run the a series called Just Send It, which is more of a fun. Again, it's a piece of popcorn, basically, in the sense that it runs on a Tuesday night. It's open to anyone. You don't need to be part of a league. Each event is their own event, and we announce the car and track that we're going to race on just the day prior, and it's a fixed setup. So it means that one of the problems you have in sim racing traditionally is that, you know, people will know a calendar up front and they'll just practice for hours and hours and hours and hours. And unless you can dedicate that time to it and have the available disposable time at your disposal, it's a bit difficult. So one of the things that Just Send It really helped is a lot of for the real world races when they were, when real world racing is going on, they're limited with their time. So this is something that they can jump in, have a lot of fun at, get in, get out, and then maybe not come back for a couple of weeks, or maybe they do. So it does. We do find we get a lot of the real world guys coming to do that. It's a nice little structured series that's broadcasted. But so that's good. That's a lot of fun. But then I've also been working within the ARG Sports Cup, so I'm one of the producers of that series as well. And so that we have our Enduro this Thursday, so that'll be the season finale. And that's we're looking forward to that. We had a few big announcements of Scotty McLaughlin and Shane Van Gisbergen joining that as co-drivers for that race. So that'll be a lot of fun. There's been a lot of series that have come through recently. But series management and production is only continuing to grow. But it is, unlike other esports, it is mostly all online. You don't really see as many in a live environment as you do in normal esports.
Production quality has been fantastic for some of these series too. So, you know, I know you guys have worked hard at ARG and the Supercars B-Series has been awesome and IndyCar did a fantastic job. So it's been really good as a sim racer to see these series, I guess, showcasing our hobby.
Definitely. And it's funny, iRacing themselves have been saying that, because obviously there's so much demand now for new content and new features. But, you know, you speak to them and they're just like, we're just a full-time production company at the moment. We've had since coronavirus and everything, because they themselves are producing the IndyCar and the IMSA series, for example. So they're like, we're just full, you know, everything's all on that. So, you know, I'm actually surprised how many updates there are going to be tonight. But
Simon, I would love to talk to you more about the production. In fact, I think we're going to dedicate an episode into producing some racing series. So I think I'm going to wrap this up. I appreciate your time and hopefully we can have you back again.
That'd be great. It's been great to catch up with you guys.
E-Racing X has been brought to you by Motorsport 360, the app, and produced by Big Hair Productions. You've been listening to Nathan Huppertz, Neville Wilkinson, and we'd like to thank Simon Feigl for his time on the show today. The song you're listening to is Electric Cars by Dave Butt, and all other production and sound design is by yours truly.
You can get eRacing X from most good podcast destinations, including Anchor, Spotify, and of course iTunes. For extended interviews, stories, and all other extras, you can view and listen at our website, eracingx.com. As always, thanks for listening and take care of yourselves.